This is DW News and these are our top stories. The US Supreme Court has dismissed a Republican-led challenge to the national health law known as Obamacare. The decision maintains affordable health insurance for tens of millions of Americans. Despite the court's increasingly conservative leaning, the justices ruled 7-2 that a challenge mounted by several states did not have legal standing. Republicans have made several unsuccessful attempts to strike down the Obama-era law since 2010. Ivory Coast's former president Laurent Gbagbo has flown back home after being acquitted of war crimes at the International Criminal Court. He was forced from power in 2011 after a months-long conflict sparked by his refusal to accept electoral defeat. Thousands of people died during the conflict. French prosecutors are pushing for a six-month jail term for former President Nicolas Sarkozy. He's on trial in Paris for illegal campaign financing. It's alleged that Sarkozy and his party spent double the amount allowed on his failed 2012 re-election bid and then tried to hide the costs. Sarkozy denies any involvement. This is DW News. There's more on our website, dw.com.
The presidents of the U.S. and Russia met in Geneva, Switzerland yesterday, not as friends or allies. The leader of the world's only superpower was supposed to put the leader of a former superpower on notice. Biden says he expects to see the results in a few months. And yet, this unanswered question, why should the U.S. president, why should the West expect change? Why should anyone expect Vladimir Putin to soon stop being Vladimir Putin? I'm Brent Goff in Berlin. This is The Day.
There's a value to being realistic and put on an optimistic front, an optimistic face.
We will defend our interests, but we are ready to continue the dialogue if the American side is also willing.
This isn't just two guys having a chat. This is two countries making decisions that could affect the whole of the world.
Biden is focused. He understands what he wants to achieve, and he achieves it very skillfully.
Let's see what happens. You know, as that old expression goes, the proof of the pudding's in the eating. We're going to know shortly.
Also coming up, the secret police of East Germany, the Stasi, kept tabs and files on practically everyone in the country. Well, those files have been preserved as evidence of the recent past. They'll soon be stored to prevent that past from being forgotten.
Did you see Stasi people standing there?
No.
I just found out when I read about it. We would never have thought about it. The thought of them standing there? No.
Well, to our viewers on PBS in the United States and to all of you around the world, welcome. We begin the day one day after the summit between U.S. President Biden and Russian President Putin, and many in the West wondering, did the meeting change anything? Well, what we know is that both presidents agreed to more talks to continue nuclear arms control, as well as limiting the proliferation of future weapons. Now, that should include cyber warfare. Biden has been clear that cyber attacks pose as much of a threat as conventional and nuclear arms, but it is not clear that Putin is on the same page. After the summit, when reporters asked the Russian president about his country's cyber attacks on U.S. targets, he rejected any involvement. No new narrative there. The deep divisions between both countries remain, but perhaps the most striking change since Geneva is in tone. How positive, not just polite, the Russian president is referring to the U.S. president, who recently said that he believes Putin is a killer.
The image of President Biden that is created in our media and in the American media has nothing to do with reality. He had a long trip. He flew across the Atlantic. There's jet lag and the changing of time zones. When I'm flying somewhere, it can be uncomfortable. But no, he looked cheerful. We talked face to face for 2 hours, maybe even more. He knows what he is talking about. Biden is a professional. When you work with him, you need to listen carefully so you don't miss anything. He does not miss a thing, that I can assure you. It was quite obvious to me.
Well, just a couple of hours later, the U.S. president was pressed by reporters on how he is now reading Vladimir Putin. Take a listen.
Why are you so confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
Yeah, I'm not confident he'll change behavior. What the hell, what do you do all the time? I said what will change their behavior is that the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
But given his past behavior has not changed, and in that press conference, after sitting down with you for several hours, he denied any involvement in cyber attacks. He downplayed human rights abuses. He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
Right? You don't understand that. You're in your own business.
I owe my last question an apology. I shouldn't have been such a wise guy with the last answer I gave. Look, to be a good reporter, you got to be negative. You got to have a negative view of life, okay? It seems to me, the way you all, you never ask a positive question.
Well, my first guest has been called Vladimir Putin's public enemy number one. Bill Browder was once an investment titan in Russia. He is now a human rights advocate, and he joins me tonight on The Day. Bill, it's good to see you again. I mean, you saw right there, it's easy for emotions to run high when these two presidents are talking about each other. I'm wondering, what is your post-mortem read on this summit?
Well, my feeling is that this summit shouldn't have happened in the first place. Nothing was accomplished by this summit. And if anything, Vladimir Putin came out in the eyes of his own people as a winner. Here you have a man who is responsible for hacking elections, cyber attacks on pipelines, shooting down passenger planes, bombing civilians in Syria, invading foreign territory in Ukraine. He shouldn't be invited and given a stage with the most important man in the free world. It's just an elevation and a validation of him that's undeserved. And as we see, there was no deliverables, there was no accomplishments that in any way justified that gift to Vladimir Putin.
And what do you make of the U.S. president saying that maybe the fruits of this labor will become apparent in several months, not weeks? We just have to be patient.
Well, I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding by President Biden and his advisors on what drives Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin is driven by his own fear of being overthrown by the Russian people. He's a kleptocrat who's stolen enormous amounts of money from his own people. The people are, as time goes on, getting more and more upset that they don't have the normal things that people should have in a middle-income country. And so normally the anger would be directed towards their leader. But Vladimir Putin, who's been in place for more than 20 years, has to redirect that anger. And so he's creating foreign enemies in order to redirect that anger. And so all of the things, the nasty things that Vladimir Putin does are driven by his own fear of being overthrown. And we can't control that. That's all internally driven. And so it's naive to think that anything we're going to say to him is going to make him behave differently. And four different U.S. presidents three previous U.S. presidents have all come to that conclusion. And so he's not a man to be negotiated with. He's a man to be contained and constrained with his bad intentions.
So what would you recommend that the U.S. president do? I mean, what should America do about what's inside the Kremlin right now?
It's very straightforward. There's an asymmetric war going on. Vladimir Putin is hacking political processes all over the world, in Germany and in the United States and the UK. There is cyber attacks going on. There's targeted assassinations. There was a Skripal affair. There's various things happening all over Europe. And we can't retaliate in a similar fashion because we're not criminals. But what we can do is that Vladimir Putin he's a very rich man, and he keeps all of his money in the West. And there's a piece of legislation that I'm responsible for called the Magnitsky Act, which freezes assets and bans visas of human rights violators. And the easy way to get to Vladimir Putin is to go after him and to go after all of his oligarch trustees and freeze their assets. If we did that, if the Western leaders had the guts to do that, that would immediately stop Vladimir Putin from all of this malign activity.
Yeah, we've been asked many times, Bill, why does the U.S. not do that, or why doesn't the U.K. Do that? I mean, do you have an idea? What is preventing the West from doing exactly what you have recommended?
Well, I think it requires, a strong constitution. It will have there will be a furious reaction. And I think so far, you know, we've been living in a world where the Cold War ended 20 years ago, and everybody is kind of relaxed, and nobody wants to, like, have trouble with Vladimir Putin. And the easier thing to do is to try to sweep it under the carpet, try to appease him. But we all know that appeasement doesn't get you anywhere, and it certainly doesn't get you anywhere with a dictator like Vladimir Putin.
We know that the president, the U.S. president, he attached this summit to his European tour. He was here attempting to get the U.K. and the European Union to stand with him when it comes to Russia and China. Do you think the United States can rely on Europe when it comes to keeping that solidarity against Russia?
Unfortunately not, for a very bad structural reason, which is that for all foreign policy decisions in Europe, it requires the unanimous consent of all 27 member states. And Vladimir Putin has been able to co-opt certain countries, like he's got a pal, Viktor Orban, who runs Hungary, and he can always rely on Orban to veto European decisions that will be tough on Russia. And there are various other countries that can do the same thing. And so the United States cannot rely on Europe, because the United States, if the United States linked its decisions exclusively to Europe, you might end up in a situation where Hungary is then vetoing U.S. foreign policy, and I don't think that would ever be tolerated.
Bill Browder, as always, it's good to get your insights. We appreciate your time tonight. Thank you. All right, turning to Iran, where some of the country's 59 million registered voters will head to the polls on Friday to choose a successor to President Hassan Rouhani. Now, polls suggest that turnout could be as low as 40%, with many people expected to boycott the vote because of economic hardship and the lack of moderate candidates. The front runner is hardliner Ibrahim Raisi. The ultra-conservative cleric is a staunch ally and protege of the supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khamenei.
Ibrahim Raisi has what it takes to make it to the top in Iran. The 60-year-old received most of his education at religious seminaries, supported Ayatollah Khomeini during the revolution in 1979, and has been part of the Islamic Republic's inner circle ever since. He's got the support of the ultra-conservative establishment and, most importantly, Iran's supreme leader. So when he entered the race to become president, Raisi immediately became a frontrunner, even more so after any serious reformist and moderate competition was barred from running and other hardliners bowed out to boost his chances. The few relatively unknown rivals still in the running know they don't stand a chance against the ultra-conservative head of the judiciary. They only serve as a backdrop to give Raisi the one thing he's lacking so far: democratic legitimacy. As a result, many Iranians feel they have no real choice at the ballot box. I'm not taking part in the elections. We participated for many years and it had no impact on our lives. And the elections are not free. I have voted 3 times before, but what I wanted never came to pass, so this time I'll definitely not vote. There's public dissatisfaction and high inflation. No one's living in comfort and peace, and the government never keeps its word. I'll never vote. Paradoxically, this increases Raisi's chances of winning even further, because